My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
It is essential that our team learns to work with our new recruit, not against him.
I'm a geek, walking down the street.
Check the computer.
The mainframe computer.
I access the mainframe.
At the end of this day, one shall stand, one shall fall.
Time to find out.
Welcome to Basically a Geek Show. Here are your hosts, Mike and Jack.
And 10 episodes ago, Jack, you remarked that we needed another X, and here we are. It is Basically a Geek Show, episode 30. I'm Mike. Yeah. With me, as always, is Jack.
Finally, triple X. The good kind, not the fucking Vin Diesel movie.
Yeah, and then they, like, had a sequel where Vin Diesel wasn't in it, and there was someone else.
Yeah, Ice Cube, Ice Tea, Ice
Cube,
Water.
Yes.
Icy Hot.
I was surprised, because, that movie came out.
Flavor Ice?
That movie came out. The second Triple X movie came out years ago, years and years ago. And back then, when I saw that Ice Cube was in that, I was like, he's still around? And that was, so, like, if Ice Cube was still doing things, color me surprised. But, let's get this show on the road. I talked a bit about Doctor Who last week, my impressions on the first episode.
Yeah.
We've got, the second episode aired. I promise we're not gonna do, like, a weekly Doctor Who episode review, but I wanted to talk a bit about it again this week because, since last week, Jack has seen both the first and second episodes, and Jack is someone who is not necessarily a fan of Doctor Who. I know he liked Christopher Eccleston's take on the Doctor, though, and he
did,
but he wasn't. But you weren't very fond of Tennant or Smith, and so
yeah, they were idiots.
And so I kind of want to get your thoughts now that you've seen two full episodes of Peter Capaldi as the Doctor, and we can get a bit into maybe talking a bit about the second episode if we want, but mostly I want to get your thoughts on Capaldi's performance. I guess the big question is, do you think he's an improvement over Tennant Smith, in your opinion?
Oh, fuck yeah, definitely. I mean, I couldn't stand Tennant. Smith I could tolerate, but mm-hmm. It wasn't like one of those things where I would watch the show. I mean, I wouldn't watch the show to see him. Mm. If there was anything else drawing me to it, I would the 50th anniversary, I watched in spite of Smith, not because of – I watched that because of John Hurt and Billy Piper. definitely a step forward. I think Capaldi's great. I'll watch this season. I don't dislike the concept behind the show.
Mm-hmm.
I just dislike a lot of things it does from time to time. Sometimes it gets a little bit too doofy for me, which is saying something.
Doctor Who does have a tendency to be overly doofy. I'm not going to sugarcoat that. It can cross that line.
And sometimes I'm just really not in the mood for that type of doofy. But I mean, Capaldi, he's got that kind of bit of a edge flair about him, whatever, that I do like, mm-hmm. I enjoyed both episodes fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
My comment on the T-Rex in London, bait and switch, bait and switch. Well, man, that was some fucking bullshit, man. I'm here to tell you.
If you'll remember, last week when you asked me, do I get to see the T-Rex in London? I did say, yeah, he's there. So, you know.
Well, no, technically you did not lie.
You know, I just want to say, on that note, you know, I kind of knew you'd be disappointed in how that played off. But, you know, it is what it is. It wasn't about the T-Rex. The T-Rex in London was.
Well, there's problem number one, sir. Instead, it was about, as the Doctor himself called them, rubbish robots from the dawn of time. And that's pretty much exactly dead on.
Yeah, the rubbish robots from the dawn of time. Yeah, it is. It's interesting, though. That the first episode in and of itself kind of needed to establish the new Doctor. And I guess I wanted to ask you, because you had a very interesting observation. What did you think of the way in which the show handled the fact that the Doctor is not an attractive young man anymore?
I've never had a show sit me down and give me a lecture about how I should like it just as much as I ever have. And if I didn't, I was a bad fucking person.
It did do that. Yes, it did.
It's like, you know, you will sit down, you will shut the fuck up, you will watch this, and if us having an old doctor bothers you, you know what? You know what? We don't need you, and you're probably a horrible person. you just most likely are, and we don't need you.
Yeah. I mean, that was a concern. How many of the fangirls who became fans because of Tennant and then later Smith would leave? Now that you had an angry old Scotsman playing the role?
I think an angry old Scotsman should play every role.
I mean, it's worth noting, though, that while the show got really big under Tennant, that the first season, at least not just domestically in the UK, but internationally, the first season of the rebooted series, which had Eccleston in the lead, was well-received and hugely popular. And while Eccleston isn't an older guy, he's not exactly a young teen heartthrob either.
No, so, he's in a different class than Tennant and Smith. Though, okay, I can kind of get maybe Tennant being the heartthrob, but Smith just looks like a fucking goober.
That's a whole other discussion I don't think we should get too far into. But needless to say, yeah, Smith does have his admirers, just as Tennant did. It's actually interesting. Smith actually was the current guy, the guy who took over the show, Stephen Moffat, had always sort of said that he always wanted the Doctor to be an older guy. And when Tennant resigned, that kind of coincided with Moffat taking over. And Moffat was planning on casting Capaldi to follow up Tennant. But then Smith just blew them all away in the auditions, so they went with Smith. So, but I do think Moffat is probably happy to finally have the older Doctor to work with that he's always sort of wanted. So, yeah. And again, I don't want to get too far down this point, but you mentioned actually that you thought that the second episode, which deals with the Daleks, who you're not a fan of, you said that even it was good for a Dalek episode.
Yeah, I mean they did something a bit different with it. And they tried to make their point, which to me just fell flat, and I'm just like, yeah, whatever, about the moral integrity of the Doctor, probably harkening back to that thing in the first episode about, you know, did Doctor Who kill a bitch?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
but, yeah, no, I liked it, and yeah, again, I get what they're trying to say at the end about, you know, the Doctor's hatred of the Daleks making him no better than them, shut the fuck up. I mean, they tried to fucking kill off his entire race, damn near succeeded. Yeah, the man has every right to be a little bit hostile.
Yeah, I did like it, though, with when he's going, like, there's no such thing as a good Dalek. And Clara's like, well, that kind of sounds prejudice. And I just like, oh, she just called the Doctor racist.
That show called everyone racist, man. Like, if you don't like Capaldi as a Doctor, that's racist.
I don't think they said there's racist. You're just shallow and nobody, and we don't want you watching.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, yeah, I'm excited. And you know what? The next one, the next episode has Robin Hood in it. So maybe, you know, Alan Rickman will show up.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I could give a rat's ass about Robin Hood. The 91 movie was good. Yeah, Alan Rickman would make it good. Again, you know, I'll watch it for Capaldi, but that's really about
seriously,
it.
If I was Stephen Moffat, I'd call up Alan Rickman and be like, seriously, what do you have what do you have going on this week?
And if you can't get him, at least get Cumberbatch.
To play Benedict Cumberbatch to play Alan Rickman's Sheriff of Nottingham.
Yes.
That would be amazing. Although it would probably piss off a lot of the fans who eventually want Sherlock and Doctor Who to have a crossover.
Well, you know, I kind of don't see that happening anyway.
Well, the reason why people are saying it is because Stephen Moffat is also the lead writer for Sherlock, so you've got the same – so basically like the same guy is running both shows, so if they ever wanted to do it, it's not like there would be a conflict among – like everyone – the creative staff would more or less be on the same page if they did that. But I don't think that would be a thing, mostly because – and a lot of people are going to maybe get angry about this. A lot of Doctor Who fans who have been wanting a Doctor Who Sherlock crossover. I like both shows. But I'm trying to think of how it would go. Maybe less so now with Capaldi. But this desire really kind of started during the Matt Smith era, and I think this would have been a case during Smith. I still think it could be an issue with Capaldi, though to a lesser degree. The characters of Sherlock Holmes from Sherlock and the Doctor, I don't think would actually get along. Because, I don't know, it's just a feeling I get.
I have a, well, my take
Sherlock,
on it.
Sherlock's got a very low tolerance for what he perceives as bullshit. And not that the Doctor spews bullshit, but the Doctor has a way of being a bit to beat around the bush at times.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I could just see, like, I don't think it would be the awesome team up. And you know what? If they made it where they didn't get along, that would actually probably make for a more interesting show, because it would not be what we expect.
Well, the thing is, okay, Sherlock, here's the reason why I don't think this will ever happen.
Mm-hmm.
Sherlock is very grounded in reality, or tries to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever inaccuracies are there about, you know, whatever. Let the nitpickies pick that shit out. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying, is in terms of the tone that the show tries to set, it takes itself very seriously. It's very grounded in reality, tries to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see them wanting to do a crossover like that.
Yeah, I don't think it would be.
It'd be weird.
It would be weird. Although I have heard that a lot of people have, they keep suggesting Benedict Cumberbatch to play the Master, one of the Doctor's arch nemeses. So, and that could be good, you know, if Cumberbatch really wants to cement his role as the new Alan Rickman, the British guy who just plays all of the villains.
Yeah, isn't it like in every British actor's contract that at some point they have to be on Doctor Who?
the thing you have to understand about it, though, is that Doctor Who has been on for over 50 years at this point, with a few gaps here and there, but for the most part, it's been on the air for 50 years, 50 plus years. So a lot of British actors grew up as fans. So if you're a British actor, you know, if you're a young British actor in 2014, you've probably grown up a fan of Doctor Who in some capacity. And so if they call and ask you, do you want to be on Doctor Who? It's like, hell yes, I want to be on Doctor Who. It would be like if you were an actor, Jack, and someone asked you to do a guest spot on Star Trek. You know, it's sort of like, hell yeah, I would.
I would actually say, let me see the uniforms first. I know what they're capable of.
Yeah, no. Simon Pegg is even in one of the first season episodes with, Eccleston. His name just escaped my mind for a second there. But yeah, no, it's really weird. You go back now and it's Simon Pegg, but it's from 2005, so it's really like before he became famous. And you're just watching this episode and then like, oh, Simon Pegg just shows up. Okay. But yeah, that's sort of our Doctor Who talk. I promise I won't make it a part of the show all too often. I just kind of wanted to get your perspective on it, Jack, and kind of go from there. I guess I don't want to make any, I don't want to set anything in stone, but I guess maybe we'll talk about, next time we'll talk about Doctor Who is, later on in the season, maybe as some of the longer running plot points and mysteries that they've set up get answered. I'm curious to see what this whole heaven business is all about. That looks interesting.
Yeah, and that lady that plays whoever the fuck it is.
Her name's Missy.
She reminds me of someone. I can't recall who, but she reminds me of someone. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, yeah. I'm not against us doing a recap or whatever, or discussing it more regularly, at least while Capaldi's on the show. As long as, you know, whoever's playing the Doctor doesn't make my fucking teeth itch.
I do like the opening, the new opening sequence they did there with the clock pattern. It's a marked departure from the aesthetics they've been using for the openings since Eccleston's run. From Eccleston to Smith, the openings changed a few times, but they've always seemed to be set against, like, a space backdrop. And here we get gears and clocks, and it sort of turns into space, but it's an interesting change of pace, and I think it sends a good message right off the bat that this is sort of a show that's going in a new direction. So, I'm excited about it. Capaldi's shaping up. Maybe it's the outfit, but I'm getting a slight Third Doctor vibe from him, and I like him, because I like the Third Doctor. He's one of my favorites from the classic Doctors, so I'm hoping things, you know, things stay the course. The Robin Hood episode, whenever they deal with historical personalities, not that, you know, Robin Hood is a historical person, but it's still going to be set in a historical era. It's going to be a historical for all intents and purposes. Although the episode is called The Robot of Sherwood, so I am gleeful of the proposition that we're going to see a robot in medieval England. That should be hilarious.
Transformers already did that.
Oh, yeah, that one episode where Starscream goes back in time and then Ramjet headbutts a knight.
Yep.
Oh, that's fantastic. And then at the end, when they come back to the present, Megatron is like, "You!" And then he starts beating up Starscream, and Starscream's like, "No, it's me!" And Megatron's like, "I know." What do we have next, Jack?
Well, now, you and I, over the last week or so, when we would try to get on World of Warcraft, we ran into some technical issues.
It was a busy day for BattleNet!
It got downright fucking annoying.
This is how bad it got. I go to log into World of Warcraft. And BattleNet, for those who are perhaps unaware, is Blizzard's overarching network that they run all of their games through. So
yeah,
if you play World of Warcraft, StarCraft II, Diablo III, Hearthstone, Heroes of the Storm, any of that, you're running it through BattleNet. So I open up the BattleNet launcher, I click on World of Warcraft, hit play, and I get this message. And it says, you know, BattleNet's been experiencing a higher than usual level of traffic. Please wait in queue. And I'm like, well, this is odd. This has never happened before. Like, all right, whatever. So I wait in queue. It says the queue, when I first did it, the first time I was in queue, it said something like a 3-hour queue, but then that time quickly whittled down and it was more like maybe 15 minutes. But, you know, I get in, I'm like, well, alright, that was odd, but I'm in, so whatever. I play the game for a while. And then I get kicked off. I'm like, the hell? Go back to log in. We're gonna put you in queue. God damn it! God damn it. I already did the queue, and I got in. No! No!
I will not stand for this.
So, Jack, why don't you take it from there and elaborate a bit on what exactly was going on here?
So,
you had a hell of a time with it.
Yeah. I was getting kicked off of both Diablo and World of Warcraft left and right. Suffice it to say, I couldn't even say some men want to watch the world burn, because these really aren't men. they're little fucking piss ants, who decided to try to make themselves relevant. And they made themselves relevant to the FBI. Basically, a group calling themselves the Lizard Squad and claiming, quotation marks and stressed, claiming to be affiliated with ISIS, hacked, or not hacked, executed denial of service attacks.
Disrupted denial of service.
Yeah, disrupted denial of service, DDoS attacks, which is basically where they spam servers to overload them and cause people to not be able to log in. That's pretty much as simple as what it is. But they attacked Battle.net. They attacked League of Legends. They attacked Twitch. They attacked the PlayStation Network as well. And then the little shit stains called in a bomb threat on an airplane that was flying the president of Sony. So this, of course, got them on some radars. If the previous shit didn't, then the last thing sure as hell did. And this went on for about, I guess, like, what was it, like 4 days that they kept, you know, fucking sticking their dicks in our Kool-Aid. Now, I heard the other day, or I read yesterday, actually, that the FBI has actually gotten most of these guys. One of them evidently made some kind of stupid post that such and such and such and such, they go by lizard names, go figure, because gotta stick to your motif. Have been captured. Yeah, I'm probably next. Good luck, FBI. And, you know, I hope these little piss ants are waterboarded in cat urine. I mean, it's not the inconvenience of not being able to log in and play my games. It's not that. It's that someone is just so much of a fucking jackass that they think that this is a good idea, and they do it for no other reason than that they can. And, yeah, I think waterboarding with cat urine would be a nice attitude adjuster for them.
Well, the thing about it is that, are these guys affiliated with ISIS? I don't know. They're not. Are these guys, but, you know, saying that you are, and then calling it a bomb threat is gonna get you on some radars.
Yeah, I mean, that gets you noticed. And if they wanted to get noticed, I mean, if their end game was to get noticed by the feds and be hauled off to fucking jail, then, or prison even, then congrats, you got your wish fuck stick. I don't get the rationale behind.
Didn't they also attack the ALS Foundation servers?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they did. I did hear that they attacked
that. Fuck you, charity.
Yeah, fuck charity. They hit a lot of things. And I don't recall that they ever said why, just that they were with ISIS or whatever. My God, they do hate our freedom. This war's gotten personal now, guys. All right, I'm going over there. But, yeah, it's – they've evidently been caught. It was a pain in the ass, but little bastards are evidently going to get at least part of what they deserve. But, yeah, they lost a lot of companies, a lot of money for a few days.
God help them if, like, the head of the FBI is a – you know – has a wow tune.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, you know, all they need is for one fanboy to interrogate them, and it's fucking game over. There will not be a respawn.
Mm-mm. Director of the FBI, long day at work, comes home, is like, now to level my druid. Can't connect to Battle.net. Son of a bitch!
Yeah. I had to spend time with my family because of you.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was the thing. It was annoying. What was also pretty funny was just some of the raging on the Battle.net forums, like the WoW forums and things. Like that one guy that you're telling about, he's just like, I don't think Blizzard will ever get it fixed.
That thread was a gold mine. So, you know, I don't know what's happening, right? So, like, I just know the battle, that my Battle.net app is not connecting. So
the webs are down.
The webs are down. So I'm like, I gotta, you know, I need to find out if this is just me or if this is more widespread. So I go to the WoW forums, go to the customer service forums, and it's always encouraging to see that you're not the only one with an issue.
Yeah.
So you see, I see that, you know, this is a thing and that people are complaining, and I see this one thread. And I go, oh, this thread will only yield constructive criticism, and it's, I want my money back. So I click it. The first post, what you expect, is some guy's like, I can't play my game. I want my money back. And, there's that. And then you go down, and someone's like, Blizzard's on it. Blizzard will get Battle.net back up and running sooner or later. Just calm down. And someone responds to that by saying, I don't think Blizzard will ever fix it.
Thank you, Captain Optimism.
Blizzard has been destroyed.
Yep.
You just go to, like, Blizzard's corporate headquarters. It's like a crater.
Yeah. Fucking Chris Metzen slumped over his computer holding a sticky picture of Thrall.
With a knife in his back and his PC sizzling.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. And Blizzard wants to do a live Q&A on their Twitch stream. This will only yield positive results with the fan base.
They're going to ignore. I mean, anything that they don't want to answer, they just ignore. I mean, that's the way they all, I mean.
No, I understand
reasonably
that.
Reasonably so.
I understand that, but I'm just saying they're going to be on the Twitch stream and they're going to be, and people are, and they can ignore it, but they're going to see people typing all sorts of shit in the chat.
I wonder, you know, some of these people that ask these questions, I wonder, like, what is the point that they have for asking?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, the thought process that goes through their minds. Because, okay, chances are Blizzard's not going to answer you. If they do, chances are they're not going to say anything productive. I mean, in a lot of ways, they're just as bad as the fans. Like that one guy you were telling about earlier tonight who's like, you know, cross-realm zones are annoying and stupid and all this other shit. And Blizzard's like, well, the problem, sir, is that you have a psychological issue.
Yeah.
And that's basically what they said, paraphrase. You know, it's a psychological perspective wherein you see the bad more than the good.
Mm-hmm.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, really, guy? I guess I can't blame them. I mean, having to put up with the shit they have to put up with, I can see where they would troll back every now and then, and I don't blame them. Because a lot of their fan base are idiots.
But, and Ghostcrawler, you had to feel sorry for that guy.
That poor bastard, man. Of course, he walked out of the frying pan into the fire because he went from Blizzard to Riot Games, who does League of Legends.
Oh, so now he's got to deal with those people.
Yeah, I mean, the one community that is worse than WoW, mm-hmm. League of Legends. I mean, those guys, man, there are some real pieces of shit over there.
Yeah.
That community is so fucking toxic that I won't even go near it.
Mm-hmm.
That in the game just doesn't appeal to me, and I don't see the point of it. But I don't know what it does here, really. But yeah, so, you know. Yeah, they're going to have their little Q&A, and people are going to be boo-hooing and Q&A as usual. And most of them aren't going to get replied to, and the ones who do will probably get a snarky response.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
But, yeah.
I'm thinking about jumping on and being like, are you ever going to kill Thrall?
Yeah, can we just kill Green Jesus, please? That'd be great.
All right, so moving on. A while back, in a Transformer, we talked about Transformers figures. We talked about Platinum, Optimus, Platinum, Silver Knight, Optimus Prime.
Yeah.
And it looked like mostly like it was made out of unpainted gray plastic. And there was much criticism on that front. I know you in particular were not very kind.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was bullshit, you know. And to my knowledge, they never said, hey, you know, this is whatever, we're going to be adding shit to it. Like, hey, this is what you're getting. Enjoy your unpainted plastic. It's Silver Knight. Durr!
And that was disconcerting, especially because Platinum Edition toys from Transformers usually do have a bit more money put into their paint budgets. But here we finally have in-hand picture of Age of Extinction, Platinum, Silver Knight, Optimus Prime, and damn, I don't know if they responded to customer feedback. I say I don't know because I don't know what the turnaround time on it is. I don't know if there was enough time to significantly alter the toy's paint scheme. But damn, this figure, its color layout actually looks pretty impressive.
My God, we're actually going to have to paint this fucking thing? What the hell?
So, his arms and legs have a really nice sheen, real nice silver paint job. Arms and legs. His chest, head, thighs, and upper arms have been chromed. And he's got bits of red and black scattered throughout, some black and red flames on his chest, red and black bits on his arms and legs. Looks like a black face paint. But between the silver paint and the chrome, and I know we've talked about chrome perhaps being a bit overdone on the show before when it comes to Transformers figures, but for a toy called Silver Knight, I'm more than willing to let that slide.
Yeah, I mean, and it works on this one. Now, on the first one they had, like the first exclusive edition of Prime or whatever for AOE, it just stood out and it looked kind of doofy to me.
Mm-hmm.
This here, it works. It works for what they're going with this, and I actually do like it. I mean, they actually were arsed to paint it, which is good. The silver paint looks good. The little paint apps they have on the chest and shit look good. You know, yeah, I actually rather like it. And part of the reason why I was also, and this kind of went into feeding my opinion on based on those first pictures we've seen, the Platinum Edition or whatever, the higher dollar edition they came out with a year or so ago of Ultra Magnus.
Mm-hmm.
That thing was ass.
Yeah.
And that just kind of showed that, okay, they don't necessarily give a fuck what they put out for these things that they're charging like $60 for, probably 70 or 80 Canadian.
Mm-hmm. Now that Platinum Ultra Magnus, was pretty expensive up here. Last I saw, the Toys R Us up here still had stacks of it that were unsold. But yeah, that thing was crap. From a distance it looked good, but the closer you got to it, the more you saw just how unpainted
ass
it was.
Yeah.
And it, just big blocks of red and blue plastic, and they were all arranged in the right order to give him a more or less sensible paint scheme. But when you actually got right up to him, he was really lacking a lot of the painted detail that would have made him look any good. It was just, once you got in, it looked cheap and unfinished, which is not something you want if you're going to sell this as a Platinum. You don't, you know, if I'm buying something as a Platinum figure, I don't want it to look like a cheap, unpainted chunk of plastic. So
yeah,
that was that. But yeah, I'm liking this. I might actually pick this. I've been thinking about it. And while the paint scheme is nice, and while it's much improved, and I kind of want it even more now that I see it, I'm also thinking, you know, when we saw a lot of the solicitations for these Silver Knight Optimus Prime figures, we were thinking about, well, is Optimus going to assume this form in the movie? We've seen Age of Extinction. We know Optimus does not become a quote-unquote Silver Knight. So I guess that was just sort of playing off the night theme that Optimus and the Dinobots had.
But so they never really even let you know that was a thing.
They touch on it briefly. They do acknowledge it. Let's not say it went completely unsaid.
It went all but completely unsaid.
It was touched upon.
It was touched upon. But for that to be like a kind of this cornerstone for the marketing of their fucking toys that these, you know, movies promote, there's a pretty big disconnect there.
I think it was a case of the marketing team not talking to the actual film production team, because the marketing team kind of went all out with the Silver Knight Optimus Prime thing, which kind of plays up the night theme that Optimus and the Dinobots are supposed to have. But as Jack said, it's something that's really not brought up in the movie. And I believe Hasbro said at a panel at BotCon that the origins of the Dinobots as sort of this order of Cybertronian knights, was originally a big plot point in the movie that got cut for time. So, you know, yeah. It was there.
Let's cut the interesting stuff for time.
I don't know. I we needed more scenes of Mark Wahlberg doing things. Yeah. I don't know.
We needed more. Those Bud Light bottles had to have their airtime.
You know what? They probably fucking did. They probably fucking did.
Jeez. I like the figure. I like it.
I do too. The fact that Optimus really doesn't assume this form in the movie has kind of made me think twice about getting it, even though I really do like the paint scheme we see here. So I'm probably going – this is probably going to be one of those things where if I happen to see it on sale and I happen to have the money for it on me, I'll get it. But it's not going to be something I'm going to go out of my way to get. But, you know, if it's there and I've got the money to blow on it, it'll probably be a purchase that happens. But moving on to another Transformers figure, Masterpiece Star Saber. Now, for those unaware, and I say this because even though Transformers is fairly popular, and I'm sure the majority of our listeners probably at least have a passing knowledge of who the main characters in Transformers are, some may not know who Star Saber is. Star Saber, in the original G1 cartoon, after it was canceled in the United States but continued in Japan, the plot line essentially went that Rodimus Prime decides that he's going to look for a new planet for Cybertronians to inhabit. He, Cup, and Ultra Magnus go off into deep space. And Star Saber is named commander of the Autobots on Earth. So Star Saber got a bit... Star Saber is a popular character amongst fans of that Japanese series. I think it's called Victory. I say think because there were a couple of Japanese series that followed the G1 series in the United States. I know one of them was called Victory. I think Victory is the one with Star Saber. 99% on that, but still... So, Star Saber was popular amongst that crowd. He kind of got a reboot in the Energon series where he was a whiny cop.
Yeah.
A whiny Autobot police officer who basically had an emo fit over Shockwave. And then failed to do anything about it. And then, and I know that got a lot of people, that whole thing got a lot of people upset, on the toy side of things, actually. Because Star Saber he was popular amongst the Japanese, the fans of the Japanese Victory series. And he even kind of had a bit of a following amongst people who weren't that familiar with Victory because he has a very kind of cool Autobot swordsman design. Obviously the name Star Saber, he wields a sword. And the original G1 toy, in addition to being rare because it never appeared in English-speaking markets, is also very large and very expensive due to its rarity. So getting a hold of one, always a bit problematic. Plus, even if you do, it's an early G1 Transformers toy, so it's very limited in what it can do in terms of posability. So everyone kind of saw his, even if everyone kind of saw Energon as sort of the chance to give Star Saber a good toy, even if maybe his on-screen characterization was a bit lacking, but the toy was basically designed to be split up into multiple components to add to Optimus Prime's armor, which meant that when he was actually together as Star Saber, the toy had limited articulation, so it actually really wasn't all that much of a step up from the G1 toy. And so Star Saber, kind of getting an updated Star Saber, has been something that a lot of people wanted, even more so when the widely successful IDW More Than Meets the Eye series kind of introduced their version of Star Saber into their mythos, where he was basically a dark Autobot paladin who was a religious zealot and had a plan to wage a, well, they called it a genocide. I'd call it more mass murder, as I don't think it would qualify as genocide per se, more like a mass slaughtering. He wanted to kill all the atheistic Transformers in that series. He was sort of revealed to be one of the big bad guys after the Decepticons were dealt with, seeing as More Than Meets the Eye takes place in a post-war world. So, Decepticons are pretty much dealt with. Star Saber kind of comes in as this dark paladin type of character who wants to wage this campaign of destruction against low Cybertronians he deems to be not faithful enough. And, again, you might say, oh, well, that kind of sounds like it's pretty dark and he sounds like a dick, and you'd be right. But if nothing else, the art was cool. And so a lot of people were like, hey, you know what? That character design for Star Saber is pretty cool. We'd like to get a toy of that. So this need for a Star Saber toy, a decent posable Star Saber toy, has kind of been percolating in the fan base for some time. So much so that when Takara Tomy, the Japanese company that owns that co-owns the Transformers brand along with Hasbro, announced that they were going to have their 24th masterpiece figure be a fan vote, it put up to a fan vote, Star Saber won easily. And so now we are getting a posable modern Star Saber toy. We've been seeing Gray prototypes for a while. We haven't really touched on it because Gray, you can really only say so much about a Gray prototype.
Yeah. But
now we've got, color pictures of Star Saber. And not only that, we have a release date and we've got a price.
Isn't the price like 50,000 Cheerios box tops or something?
18,000 yen. Which
close enough.
I think, and again, nobody hold this to me. I'm not that great when it comes to currency conversion off the top of my head, but I believe 18,000 yen is $180 more or less. I've been told that a general rule is to knock two zeros off of the yen price. And that's more or less what you get in terms of conversion to American dollars, and American and Canadian dollars are more or less on par these days. So, you know, more or less 180. This is very much G1 Star Saber, not Energon Star Saber. And it's really not even More Than Meets the Eye comic Star Saber. He's got a very G1 look to him. So, I'm just, Jack, what do you think? Is this a figure that you would be interested in?
Not really. I mean, it looks very Japanese, and it looks very 1980s. I mean, I know it's got, you know, modern engineering behind it and everything, and maybe it's because, you know, being an American and not really having that much exposure to Star Saber aside from Energon. I don't have that same desire to see, you know, these hearkenings to G1 with this character as I would with some of the others.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like something you'd pick up at a dollar store.
Well, you have to keep in mind, you say he's very 80s and very Japanese. He is an 80s
right, yeah,
Japanese and robot design.
Yeah, I mean, I am totally aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
But, it looks like one of these cheap-looking, no-name robots that you would, like, get in, you know, like, Family Dollar or Dollar General or something like that back in the 80s.
I think his very simplistic color scheme kind of goes a long way in that.
It does. It does. And it looks kind of, I don't know, I don't even know how to put it. It looks like a, yeah, and kind of preschoolerish.
Mm-hmm. Now,
it looks generic. Generic is the word I'm looking for. It looks like any generic Japanese robot.
Okay,
that's what it is.
Now, okay, so with that in mind, I'm going to show you a picture of Star Saber. As he's been reimagined in IDW. So this is Dark Paladin Star Saber.
Okay.
And it's the same basic design, but they've kind of given him a few stylistic changes. Would you be interested in a toy based on that?
Oh, well, let's take a look. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that looks fairly similar to the one from Energon, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, no, I like that.
I think that the difference, and it goes a long way. When it comes to toys, or even comes to robot designs in general, a few modifications here and there do go a long way. I think the IDW version benefits. The majority of his shoulders, as you see, are red. Whereas in the Masterpiece version, which is a slavish homage to the G1 color scheme, he's got giant plain white blocks for shoulders. And I think making them red in the IDW version helps break up the color there, helps add a little bit more variety to it. And I think the addition of those spiky vent things on the top of IDW Star Saber shoulders really kind of give him more of a distinct visual identity.
Yeah.
Than just kind of the more traditional blocky shoulders that Star Saber, the Masterpiece one, has. I'm not going to lie. I'm probably not going to pick this up. If for no other reason, then he just seems too G1-y, I guess. Which is strange, because the Masterpiece line has sort of thrived on faithful reproductions of older designs. But I think Star Saber, for the reasons Jack kind of alluded to, is a character whose visual identity could probably stand to be updated. And it's kind of a weird thing to say, because, again, I realize that Masterpiece's sort of modus operandi is to faithfully reproduce G1 designs and color schemes. So I can't really fault the toy for that, because it's basically doing everything it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
And it's doing everything it's supposed to do quite well. I'm just saying that means it's not a toy that I want. And as unlikely as it probably is, I'm more inclined to just wait out and hope we get a Voyager version at mass retail of IDW Star Saber. We know that Hasbro, for their Generations line, has been homaging IDW designs more and more likely. You know, more and more as we've gone on.
Yeah, yeah.
And so hopefully one day, you know, someone at Hasbro decides, hey, let's do Voyager Star Saber from IDW, and we get that, and I'll probably be able to pick it up for $20. It'll be more.
I want a torturable IDW wheelie.
Do you?
Yes.
You're just like you could just buy a wheelie toy and then just like decapitate him. Like, The head will be on a ball joint and you just pop it off.
Well, yeah, no. But like in the comic where, you know, his arm got fucked up and he's going in great lengths to explain how much mind-shattering agony it was to transform. Because he, like, you know, jerry-rigged some kind of makeshift arm for himself out of, like, you know, popsicle sticks and bubble gum. And, yeah, I'm just like, yes, Wheelie. Feel the pain. Feel it. That's what I want.
You want a Wheelie toy with a messed up arm.
Yes.
That somehow expresses its pain to you as you transform it.
Yes.
You know, I'm sure they could put a sound box in there and...
I know there's a market for this.
Give you, you know, stick a sound box in there somewhere and every time you transform it, you just hear this blood-curdling scream.
I know there's a market for this. There has to be.
Well, you know, that's... It's really interesting to see what Masterpiece is doing. It kind of seems like Masterpiece, as far Masterpiece Transformers line, they were kind of firing on all cylinders. They did a series of cars. They did Sideswipe and Red Alert. Then they did the Fairlady Zed triplets, Prowl, Smokescreen, and Bluestreak.
Yeah.
They announced that they have planned that, you know, Wheeljack and Bumblebee are coming. Bumblebee being a huge thing because it's a Volkswagen Beetle. They finally got Volkswagen to play ball. And so then they had Soundwave. They, greatly improved the Masterpiece Seeker mold. And so Masterpiece seemed to be firing on all cylinders, in a lot of ways. And then, now, I don't know, it kind of just seems like there's been a lull. We got the fan vote in Star Saber. They're introducing a repaint of Masterpiece Wheeljack. It's kind of a weird concept. See, Transformers actually started as a... They started by appropriating the toys from a Japanese line called Diaclone.
Right.
And where it was, Diaclone is just basically a toy line of robot to car, and robot to plane, action figures. They didn't have any story behind them. And then Hasbro went to Takara and said, you know, we could probably make something pretty cool with these. And so they worked together and came up with the Transformers line, the Transformers mythos. But the point being that a lot of the G1 Transformers characters existed prior to Transformers with different paint jobs and color schemes as Diaclone figures. Now, the Wheeljack toy was originally more of a... Like, his original Diaclone scheme was more red and white based. But... As it turns out, you know, we are getting this.
And now I just sent you a link to an actual picture of him as he was in the cartoon, Star Saber. And you were right. It is the Victory Series. Now, like, okay, what you're talking about, how the Masterpiece line has treated G1 figures, there is a bit of a departure with the Star Saber figure because it seems to be too literal of an interpretation to the G1 toy. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, okay, with Prime, they tried to make him look less like the G1 toy and more like the G1 cartoon. Mm-hmm. Now, that picture that I just sent you by a link on Skype, that shows, you know, how he looked in the cartoon.
Yes.
Now, if they had taken that same mentality and made him look closer to how he did in the cartoon as opposed to closer to the G1 toy, that right there I like.
Yeah, he's got a little bit, he's got a color scheme that kind of breaks up the white in his shoulders.
Yeah.
He's not as overly boxy. He's got...
Right, exactly.
I could definitely get on board with that.
see, that seems to be mostly what they had been doing is, you know, make them look more like they did in the cartoons, mm-hmm. as opposed to the toy versions, because the G1 toys in a lot of cases, Ironhide, I'm looking at you, were just as far in a departure from what their cartoon counterparts looked like that you couldn't even know what character it fucking was half the time.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, Optimus Prime, when they did the masterpiece molds of him, you know, if they had made him look, basically just done a better engineered version of his original G1 toy, it wouldn't have gone over that well because, you know, and I think maybe they kept it that Takara took it a little bit too literal with this one.
Indeed. Now that is a good point. I bring it up. They really went overly slavish to the toy when traditionally the trend's been going to the cartoon. That's a good point. But this is a link to what I'm talking about. They've basically repainted the masterpiece Wheeljack toy, which will be coming out soon, in his original Diaclone colors, and made him a new character, a Decepticon called Exhaust.
Okay, let's see here.
And the reason I'm talking about that is that we had, after this glut of fantastic masterpiece figures that the fandom was eating up and raving about, you know, we have a fan-voted masterpiece Star Saber. And then now we have them taking the Wheeljack mold, repainting it as his original Diaclone paint scheme, and calling it a new character who we've never heard of before.
Yeah.
My question is Takara running out of ideas when it comes to masterpiece? Because, you know, yes, people have always wanted sort of an updated Star Saber. And so a lot of people are happy about Masterpiece Star Saber. But that's not a decision they came to on their own. They solicited the fans. Like, they basically asked, hey, what do you guys want? And yeah. It kind of seems like maybe Masterpiece, after that terrific run it had, it might have reached the point where they're not sure. They don't know what they can – they're not sure what to do next.
I mean, in all honesty, logically it's going to get to that point because there's only so much you can do.
Well, okay, like Ironhide, for example. They haven't done Masterpiece Ironhide, and Lord knows if anyone
– oh, God.
If anyone needs a faithful redo, it's Ironhide. Galvatron is still out
there. True.
There's Megatron. Megatron was, the Masterpiece Megatron is, by current Masterpiece standards, the line kind of underwent a bit of a reboot around, Takara officially kind of recognizes the reboot around Masterpiece 10, which was the second Masterpiece Optimus figure. But right. I'd argue that the reboot more or less happened with Starscream. That's when the figure started to get a bit smaller. Point being that Masterpiece Megatron is a pretty large and overly complex toy. So, you know, if they're thinking, if they need something to do, another Masterpiece Megatron, maybe. Megatron, here, Ironhide, Galvatron.
Here's a thought if you want to shoot for the moon. Mm. Masterpiece Devastator.
That thing would be huge.
That's what she said.
I don't know. A Masterpiece Combiner, like, that would be very expensive and very big. And traditionally, when it comes to toys, even among collectors, big and expensive generally don't go very well.
Well, you know, you said they're running out of ideas, and here I am, freely offering forth from my wellspring of wisdom, and what do, sir? You shun me. You shun my brilliance.
Brilliance, is that what it is?
I have a condition.
But yeah, that's sort of the Transformers toy news. Transformers news in general has been very slow. I mean, the movie came out, we talked about that, and now we're just kind of in this period where it's like, well, I guess we're just waiting for the Robots in Disguise show, which still feels weird because I still think of Robots in Disguise as that one show with the fire truck Optimus and the talking shark.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we pretty much solved our dilemma on that. We're just going to refer to the new one as R.I. Derp.
R.I. Derp?
Yeah, R.I. Derp.
Yeah.
I love that picture.
You've still got it as your Skype image.
Yes, I do.
I cycled through Rewind for reasons, and now I'm rocking Blackhand the Destroyer because I'm kind of in the Warlords of Draenor mood at the moment. So
yeah, and you know, we haven't talked about that for a couple weeks either, but that's because there really hasn't been anything much to say. We're in, you know, the pre-beta, or we're in the beta pre-release stage, and we really, I mean, we could go over class changes and shit like that with you guys, but most of you guys don't play WoW, and we're not going to sit here and fucking bore you with, you know.
We like to keep our WoW coverage to major game development, major game news and lore stuff, you know, basically the story. That even if you don't play, you know, if you just like hearing about cool fantasy stuff, you could get something out of it. But we're not going to bore you with game mechanics or class changes or any of that stuff.
No, we bitch about that in private.
Yeah, we do. Paladins are getting retribution. Paladins are getting nerfed.
Let's. Actually, no. I need to follow my own how-to guide. We need to get on the forums right now. We haven't played it yet, but that doesn't mean anything. We need to show our passion.
If you actually wait to play the changes before forming an opinion, that just means you're a sheeple.
And I will not be a sheeple, sir. I will not be a fucking sheeple.
So even though you don't know how the new ret changes were play, you need to go on the forums right now and call Chris Metzen gay.
I do. I really do.
And that will surely get everyone to, you know, reconsider. And I'm sure they'll bump that right up.
I bet you right now, right up
from 15 to 30.
If I were to make a thread right now on the WoW forums that said Chris Metzen is gay, that is all. Someone, and maybe even reference like Retribution Paladin nerf or whatever. I bet you at least one response to the thread would be, what the fuck does Thrall have to do with Retribution Paladins?
I did like it. I think it was on the Story Forum, which is the lore-centric forum of the Warcraft forums, the official Warcraft forums.
Wait, they have one of those?
Yeah.
I've never been there.
It's a dumpster fire. Because it's basically it's basically people just bitching about the Forsaken and Thrall. It's really hard to find a redeemable conversation in there. But I think it was there where someone said like proof that orcs are evil.
Yeah.
And they had like, I'm looking at the back of Warcraft.
That was on MMO Champion.
Oh, that was on MMO Champions. Okay.
Yeah.
But, like, they're like, I'm looking at the back of the Warcraft 1 box.
Yeah. And it says the noble humans or the evil orcs.
So I guess that solves it.
Yeah. You know, well, here all this time, all these people have been raging for years, 10 years now, and no one thought to look at the back of the fucking box. Here you go, guys.
I just thought it was great when, again, this is another MMO Champions thread, when Warlords of Draenor came out. And a lot of Horde fans were pissed off because the villains were basically all of these orcish heroes. And they were being turned into expansion villains. And they're like, you can't do it like this, it's unfair. And then someone goes, orcs as the villains of the Warcraft series? It's like, and then they
what
posted
is this madness.
And then they posted a picture of the Warcraft 1 box, and it's Warcraft orcs versus humans. And he's like,
oh, right,
yeah.
But yeah, so that's why we haven't really been talking much about Draenor. You know, the thing is, a lot of times when Mike and I are going to make a show, we have to try to figure out what's going to be, you know, interesting, and sometimes. We have to dig a bit because a lot of the stuff we know that a lot of, even though this is a geek show, we realize a lot of our audience are not hardcore geeks. So we got to kind of, I guess, generalize it a bit in some ways, you know?
Yeah, like I said, we don't want to bore you guys with, you know, World of Warcraft game mechanics or anything like that. So we're not, you know, we're going to stick to the more interesting story and major gameplay developments.
So I will say one more thing, we'll get back on track.
Okay.
Next week's episode, I will do the public movie defender of Howard the Duck.
Very interesting, considering that he appears at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, and that's what made me think now would be a great time to do it. I would love to see my favorite chick banging duck to make a comeback and get ducky with it. That should be a thing. I need to write that the fuck down. We need to call people, Mike, and
no,
give them that.
No, we don't.
We need to call people. We need to fuck call people. I'm going to send a message right now.
You do that. You get right on that. But anyway, moving on from that, what do we have next?
Well, speaking of movies, actually, two movies. That have had sequels come out, you know, this year, have had their third iterations pushed back. And they are, well, respectively, How to Train Your Dragon 2,
mm-hmm.
and Amazing Spider-Man 2, both have had their third installments pushed back quite a bit. Now, How to Train Your Dragon has done very well. By going by the numbers, $600 million in revenue.
I believe that that means that it's didn't it outdraw the Lego Movie, which lot of people liked.
Yeah, and God only knows why. I don't know. It's a movie about fucking blocks, people. It's a movie about fucking not like literally blocks fucking. That would be an entire. I'm sure there's something you can find for that, but no, a movie about blocks. Fucking hell, blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is like, oh, it's such a great movie. And Liam Neeson's street cred just continues to plummet. Yeah, I know. How to Train Your Dragon 2.
He must have a drug thing, man.
Oh, my God. That comment was no way, shape, form, or fashion intended to be libelous or slanderous. Thank you. if you don't have an official legal department, please don't sue us. So
I'm Jewish. I'm sure I got cousins who are lawyers.
That's racist.
No, I see. When I say it, it's okay. So.
Okay. I see how you are. I see how you are. See how you are. You people. Uh-huh. I see. So anyways, $600 million. Nothing to fucking sneeze at. I mean, by all accounts, one of the higher performing movies this year. And I recently seen it myself, actually. And I thought it was fucking great. I loved it.
The article I read mentioned that it's actually when you, and again, it's kind of hard to measure these kind of things, but by all measurable means, it's one of, if not the most positively reviewed movies of the year.
Yeah, and it really is good. I mean, especially when it comes to animated movies, I go into the sequels, and I'm not going to do a review on this because we don't have it, you know, budgeted in the time for this week. But I'm just going to say, you know, going into sequels for animated movies, I don't set expectations high. And I was very pleasantly surprised with this one. It had enough of what was in the first one. It didn't overdo it. It didn't pander. It was its own movie in its own way, and it was really good, and I had a blast with it.
Yeah.
So if you haven't seen it, fucking see it. It's great.
I haven't seen the second one. I saw the first one. I thoroughly enjoyed it. As far as animated films go, I can't wait to see the second one. Meant to in theaters, never got around to it. But it seems as if it didn't need my help. $600 million is it for an animated film. Nothing to sneeze at. But apparently that did not impress the folks at DreamWorks.
Yeah, and it's kind of weird the reason given for it. Basically like, okay, they're like, yeah, it did great, but it didn't do as great as we wanted it to or something like that. It's kind of weird.
I'm trying to remember from the article I read, so my numbers might be slightly off, but I'm going to give you a ballpark. Apparently, opening weekend for How to Train Your Dragon 1 was something like $215 million. opening weekend for How to Train Your Dragon 2 was $175 million. So I guess DreamWorks looking at those opening weekend numbers and saying, yeah, the second one made all this money, but, you know, opening weekend was not as good, and it doesn't seem as it doesn't seem like it's really made its way into the public consciousness despite doing so well. Seems to be what they're saying.
Well, maybe that's because they waited four goddamn years to release a sequel, and pushing the next one back till 2017 isn't going to bloody help much.
I think,
to strike while the iron's hot.
I mean, I kind of understand where they're coming from. At the same time, I think it's flawed logic.
Yeah.
Because if you look at movies across the board this summer,
They've all been underperforming.
This has been a down year for Hollywood.
With the exception, like, I think the only movie that I can say, and this isn't me being biased, you know where I'm going, the only movie that it outperformed what people expected was Godzilla.
I don't know. Transformers 4 made over $1 billion. I don't think anyone went in. I don't think anyone can seriously look at that and say, gosh, it could, gosh, way to underperform Transformers.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, okay. I mean, no, I'm not talking about, I'm not saying TF4 underperformed. I'm saying that one got what people were expecting.
Yes.
That was you and I, that's what we expected it to get. I'm saying the only movie that overperformed what people would have probably thought just going into it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Godzilla was a shot in the dark. Most people don't think blockbuster movie with Godzilla anymore.
I remember people saying, like, Godzilla made over $300 million? The fuck?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was the real dark horse this movie season. Thank you, God, finally.
But, I mean, everything else, very few, in terms of money made, everything's been underperforming this year. This year in Hollywood, and How to Train Your Dragon has as well. But you know, obviously, compared to what the original did 4 years ago, but you know, damn, $600 million for an animated film, one of the most positively reviewed, if not the most positively reviewed movie in general, not just animated, but just across the board. I mean, I have to think that if you're looking at it within the context of this movie season and the way movies have been performing, that it more than held its own. And, like, I don't get it. Granted, I am not a movie executive, but if I were one of the higher ups at DreamWorks, I'm seeing these returns. I'm saying, you know, good job. Yeah, make the third one as fast as you can.
I give them credit for not wanting to become the next Land Before Time. I give them credit for that. But, yeah, you know, there's a middle ground. And, you know, I definitely don't see anything from these numbers that necessitates, you know, postponing a sequel by another year. Mm-hmm. But they did at least give it an exact release date. Like July, I want to say now, I could be wrong, I want to say like July 16th of 2017. Which incidentally is going to be slated against the sequel to Finding Nemo, because way to strike while the iron's hot, Disney. It's going to be called Finding Dory.
Really?
Yes.
Fuck. You know what?
This is not a joke. I'm not making this up.
You know, Finding Nemo, I know you've got a soft spot for that movie, man. I just did not see it. I saw it, but I just don't get the love.
Well, my enjoyment of that movie is, it's atypical.
I got you. No. I get you in that regard. I'm just saying, I'm just saying when I saw it, I was like, they just took the plot to Bambi and made them fish.
But they made it better because it wasn't Bambi, and I fucking hated Bambi. Like, even as a kid, like, I hated Bambi.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, when I went to see Bambi as a kid, my mother had a much better time than I did.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, for me, I was probably like two or three when I went to go see it. The first 10, 15 minutes scared the living hell out of me.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, it was a fucking snooze fest. So it's like, can we find this medium ground, guys? Can I, A, not soil my pants, but still be interested? Maybe? That'd be great. And I was so thinking these things at 3 years old. But yeah.
But another movie, like you said, How to Train Your Dragon 3 does at least have a solid release date behind it. Not so for Amazing Spider-Man. Amazing Spider-Man 2 came out this summer. Jack and I have fairly different opinions of it. He thinks it's absolute rubbish. I still maintain that despite its flaws, it was fun. But regardless, Sony has pushed Amazing Spider-Man 3 back to what they're just calling sometime in 2018.
Soon,
exactly. So, you know, we're talking 4 years away, and we don't even have an exact date.
I mean, we could all be under oppressive alien rule by then, and it won't matter. But I mean, with Spider-Man 3, that's deserved. I'm sorry. That second movie was ass. And now we know that, you know, I get it. They lose the rights to Spider-Man if they don't make one every 4 years. So they're pushing it out the most they can do on this before they take another hit on it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's.
But you see, again.
Very deserved.
I mean, again, you might not like the movie, but it made $708 million.
So, wow. I didn't know that, because, yeah, that's...
So, regardless
that's
of...
That's a lot of people victimized.
So, but, you know, regardless of your opinions of the film itself, fact is, it was popular and made money. And I guess I kind of have an idea of what's going on, because, okay... as you said, they have to make a movie every 4 years or else, you know, Marvel gets the rights to the character back.
Right.
And Sony wants to hang on to that because superhero films are big business. But you look at what the trend is in superhero films. The Marvel Cinematic Universe, it's all interconnected, right? DC is trying to do their own thing with Batman v Superman, right? So DC's trying to do the whole interconnected thing as well. And then you jump over to Fox. Now, Fox has the rights to two Marvel franchises, Fantastic Four and X-Men. All the X-Men movies are obviously interconnected, but they're also rebooting Fantastic Four. And the rumor is that that the new rebooted Fantastic Four series will take place within the Fox X-Men film universe. So Sony's looking and they're saying, well, Fox is doing their own interconnected thing. DC's doing their own interconnected thing. Marvel's doing their whole interconnected thing. And Sony's like, well, what do we have? They just have Spider-Man. But they're trying, they've been talking about doing a Sinister Six movie. Now, the Sinister Six are obviously six Spider-Man villains, and they've been laying the groundwork in the first two Amazing Spider-Man films with the Lizard, Electro, Green Goblin. We saw the Rhino, and then we saw Dr. Octopus's tentacles, and we saw the Vulture's wings in Amazing Spider-Man 2. So they've been laying the groundwork to introduce more of these villains. We've heard that Sony wants to do a Venom movie. So the way that I see it is that Sony's not so much stopping. I mean, Sony's not so much delaying Amazing Spider-Man 3.
Right.
Pardon?
No, go on. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, they're not so much delaying Amazing Spider-Man 3 because they lack confidence in it. Again, right. $700 million. That's a lot of money. But what they're doing is I think they're trying to create their own interconnected series of films, and they're trying to craft that out of the one franchise they can. So they're going to try to do a Sinister Six movie, and I still don't know how that's going to work because I don't think anyone wants to see a movie that's primarily about villains. But they're going to try to probably turn Venom into an anti-hero, and they're trying to create this interconnected cinematic universe using just Spider-Man characters, but making it seem like it's more than just Spider-Man, if that makes any sense.
It does. The question is, can they actually make it make sense in a fucking movie?
I, like I said, I don't know how a Sinister Six movie is going to do, like, both in terms of how it's going to be made and also how it'll play to the audience. Because, you know, if it, they're calling it a Sinister Six movie, not Spider-Man versus the Sinister Six. So if the main characters are just going to be villains, like, I guess one of them might turn and become good, but it's really dicey how you can make a movie using primarily villains as your stars.
Unless that, I mean, unless that is going to be Spider-Man 3 and they just need this much time to get their shit together.
I don't think it will, because Spider-Man, because they've been pretty consistent in referring to the Sinister Six movie as the Sinister Six and not Amazing Spider-Man 3. So, I don't know. It just seems really weird to me in terms of what it can, of what this movie's gonna be. Like, and Venom, they're gonna try to turn Venom into an anti-hero like he was in the comics. Like, he became in the comics. He was a straight up villain originally. It just seems like that's what they're doing. They're trying to get in on this interconnected comic book film trend. But they only have the rights to one franchise, so they're trying to piecemeal it up and say, and trying to form multiple franchises from one, in a way. And I'm just not sure how that can work. And I think that's what they're delaying Spider-Man for, because they've done the two Amazing Spider-Man movies, they can do a Venom movie, they can do a Sinister Six movie, and then they can do a Spider-Man movie in 4 years. And it'll make it seem all that much more interconnected when they bring Spider-Man back into it after 2 years of after two villain movies. So, I don't know. It seems like it's going to be. I mean, if that's what they're going to do, it's a shame. And at this point, I'd rather they just lose the rights back to Marvel and that Marvel just integrates Spider-Man into their own Avengers universe, because Spider-Man has a history in the Avengers. He is one of the more popular Marvel characters, so pairing him with the Avengers would seem natural to even non-comic book fans. I just rather they lose it back at this point, because it seems like they're trying to milk water out of a stone at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I personally think, well, I mean, Fox seems to be doing okay with the X-Men series. My only thoughts on that are that I would like to see, you know, the X-Men with the Avengers in a way that's meaningful and that can, you know, actually be done, because right now the licensing between the two, that can't be done. And again, you know, the fans lose out because they can't get their fucking shit together with their licensing. Their shit is together, but it's in a way that does a disservice to the fans. And,
well, I mean, they could do something. You'd have to get Fox and Marvel Studios to essentially play nice. And that's a lot of people with a lot of ideas and a lot of money being thrown around, and it seems like it would just be too much of a hassle to try to get the X-Men and the Avengers to kind of coexist.
Yeah, probably not going to happen, most likely. Again, unless, you know, someone just, they just end up losing the rights to them, they revert back to Marvel, and then, you know, Marvel can alter their fucking 30-year plan or whatever the hell it is to,
it's gonna be interesting to see how, it's going to be interesting to see how they deal with Quicksilver, since they can't, since, you know, he was alluded, he's Magneto's son, they alluded to that in Days of Futures Past. But he's also going to be in Avengers, but they can't refer to him as Magneto because, Fox has the rights to the X-Men as Magneto's kid. So how they deal with that is going to be interesting. Like,
I think the best way to deal with it is to not. He's just there. We all know where he came from. If you don't, well, you're not going to miss anything if it's not said. You're not going to be any worse off for it, and just let it ride.
It's going to be, well, it's like he and his sister are going to be in it. So it's like Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver. It's, being Magneto's kids is sort of a big part of them as characters. So how they get around that will be interesting. But I guess moving on, I wanted to talk a bit about wrestling.
Wrestlings.
Now, last time we talked about wrestling, we were fresh off of SummerSlam, where Brock Lesnar nearly suplexed John Cena to death.
Hey, there's nothing in the rules saying that you can't.
Yeah. And so I guess people were kind of wondering what they were going to do next. SummerSlam was a big surprise. A lot of people kind of figured that Lesnar was going to win at SummerSlam, but I think people were still shocked by just how one-sided it was. And so everyone was kind of curious, well, what are they going to do next? Who can Lesnar face? So many possibilities sort of opening up. And they announced it. Night of Champions. The next pay-per-view, the first pay-per-view, by the way, which is going to be open to the next round of subscriptions for the network. That's when all of those subscriptions from 6 months ago are going to come up for renewal, is just before Night of Champions. So they're really going to try to make Night of Champions a pay-per-view that you're going to want to plop down $9.99 for. And so, what do they announce?
Or $11.99 if you live in Canada.
Or certain parts of Canada, because Rogers isn't nationwide. It's mostly in Ontario. So if you're between BC and Ontario in Canada, you know, if you're in the prairies, unfortunately, you're probably SOL if you wanted the network. Good job, WWE. But point being, Night of Champions, they announce who Brock Lesnar's facing, and it's John Cena in a rematch. And I'm worried, because I'm worried that they're going to have John Cena win the title back, and I'm pissed off at this for reasons beyond just boo John Cena. See, Brock Lesnar beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania. And that was the capstone to a long campaign to rebuild Brock Lesnar. Because Brock Lesnar, back in 2002 when he debuted, was pushed as, hey, this was his slogan, this was his, you know, nickname, he was the next big thing. He was gonna be the next big superstar of the WWE, after Stone Cold and The Rock, Stone Cold retired, The Rock went off to Hollywood. And so he was positioned as the next star, but then apparently it was the traveling schedule that basically got to him, and he quit. He just up and quit. And he eventually became a UFC star, UFC heavyweight champion, which I found hilarious because it really shut up a lot of UFC fans. And then, you know, his UFC career ends. He comes down with an injury that basically ends his UFC career. And he goes back to WWE. And this is huge, because when he was in WWE, he is presented as a monster. Only now, in the time between his last WWE stint and his return, back in 2012 when he first came back, he had gone on and legitimized himself as a tough motherfucker by winning the UFC heavyweight title. So, what do they do when Brock Lesnar first comes back in 2012? They have him face John Cena, and John Cena beats him. And that was dumb. That was one of the dumbest things they could have done. Because you have this unstoppable monster of a character, and he loses in his first match back. You don't have to be a wrestling genius to figure out that's not how you tell a story.
Yeah, no. Since we've dropped all pretense now, you know, within the field of pro wrestling, mm-hmm. as to, you know, we've dropped any semblances or illusions that it is real. Mm. that means that their chief obligation now is to present an interesting, compelling story within the framework of quote unquote sports entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, what you're saying, yeah, I mean, I'm an idiot when it comes to these things, and even I'm like, what?
So that was back in 2012. They seemed to realize that mistake, and they went about kind of rehabilitating Brock Lesnar as this ass kicker. He beat Triple H, he broke both of Triple H's arms. He broke Shawn Michaels' arm, he beat the crap out of Mark Henry, he beat the crap out of The Big Show. He beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania. That was the capstone. When he beats Undertaker at WrestleMania, Brock Lesnar, he's been rebuilt as this monster because he's done what no one else has been able to do. 21 years Undertaker's undefeated at WrestleMania. Nope, not anymore. Brock Lesnar just kicked his ass. Then, what do they do? Give him this title shot. He goes up against John Cena. And he kicks John Cena's ass. It is the most one-sided title match in WWE history. And then what happens? They put him back in John Cena. And the way that they've been booking it, it seems like John Cena is going to retake the title. And this is irksome.
Yeah, because it just makes everything they've done worthless.
It makes everything they've done worthless, and by having Brock Lesnar beat The Undertaker, by having Brock Lesnar beat John Cena, who in terms of the story is a 15-time world champion, they have set Brock Lesnar up as this world-destroying monster. And what you have now is this world-destroying monster as the world champion. And you've got a great opportunity here. You've got the chance to take a young, up-and-coming talent and give them the first victory over WWE champion Brock Lesnar. And whoever gets that victory will have all the cred in the world as far as the audience is concerned. You can make a new star almost overnight if you put a young, promising talent over Brock Lesnar. You just got... And to waste it on John Cena, John Cena's career isn't on the downward spiral quite yet, but we're clearly at the point in John Cena's career where he's got less time ahead of him as he does behind him.
Yeah.
And so John Cena, 15-time world champion, their biggest star as far as the younger demographic is concerned, John Cena is not going to get any bigger than he is right now. And having John Cena beat Brock Lesnar and regain the title would be such a tremendous waste of an opportunity. I mean, they want to position Roman Reigns as the next big star of the company. Well, that's great. I don't have a problem with Roman Reigns. I like him. And Roman Reigns is a big, strong guy. You put him in the ring with Brock Lesnar, and you book it so it is just this brutal brawl, and you have Roman Reigns as the one who comes out on top, you've made him into a legitimately badass star for the foreseeable future. And now there have been people who are saying, oh, John Cena's going to win the title back at Night of Champions, but Brock Lesnar's going to regain it sometime before WrestleMania, and then Roman Reigns will beat him at WrestleMania. And that's all good. But it won't mean as much.
Yeah.
You've got to have... It's basic booking. It's basic wrestling booking. Brock Lesnar needs to hold this title as long as he can, kicking the crap out of everyone who tries to take it from him. I want Brock Lesnar to go out one night on Raw and issue an open challenge. Anyone who wants to from the locker room can come out and challenge him for the title. And I want Kofi Kingston to run out there. And I want Brock to pick him up and toss him 14 rows into the stands. I mean, I want Brock Lesnar to absolutely tear through the locker room until Roman Reigns steps up. He probably wins the Royal Rumble. You set it up. Reigns versus Lesnar, WrestleMania 31. It happens. It's a brutal fucking, it's a brutal match to watch. And even people who know that it's all choreographed, even people then are watching going, oh, fuck, that looked brutal. I want people to, I want, you book it in a match that people are uncomfortable to be watching. And it's just, and then you have Reigns pull out the victory at the end. He ends, he's the first person to beat Brock Lesnar since Lesnar kicked Cena's ass and beat The Undertaker. He's the first person to end Lesnar's reign of terror. He's the guy who gets the title off of Lesnar. He is the hero. And that's how you build up a new babyface. Lesnar presents them with an opportunity to make a star out of whoever they want, and if that person's Reigns, then by all means do it. But they're going to piss that opportunity away if they have John Cena come back and beat Lesnar a month after Lesnar basically suplexed him into a pile of his own, like, bodily substance. It's just like a puddle of John Cena in the middle of the ring after SummerSlam.
Thank you, Andre. I'll have the veal piccata.
Yeah. You know, John Cena's there. I don't want to go to school today. So, and another thing that's pissed me off about this whole thing is that John Cena got his ass kicked. And what have wrestling fans been demanding of John Cena in the for the past, maybe he's been on top for 10 years, so maybe the past 5, give or take. People have wanted to see John, a lot of people have been wanting to see John Cena turn heel, because I think that if he becomes a bad guy, it'll freshen his character up. I don't even necessarily think you need to turn him into a bad guy. But John Cena's character has essentially remained unchanged for 10 years. And he needs to show something of an edge. Or maybe show some humility. Or be something other than the smiling, I'm gonna work hard and do whatever it takes kind of guy, because people are fucking tired of it. And again, yeah, you have an opportunity here with Lesnar. Lesnar kicked his ass at SummerSlam. So what you do is you have John Cena come out. If you're insistent on doing a rematch with John Cena, you have John Cena come out and you have him act dejected, and then you slowly have him regain his confidence, maybe show him training to bulk up. You know, he gets pissed off. He stops wearing the fucking walking billboard t-shirt and hat and armband combo. Make him seem like he's been humbled and he's pissed off and he wants to get revenge. Do that. But no, they don't. They fucking don't. He's not on Raw the night after SummerSlam. The next week he does show up and he's like, I'm gonna go and beat Brock Lesnar because I want to fight him again. It's like, no, no, you don't. The fact that John Cena gets an ass kicking like that and doesn't even show any humility towards the man who kicked his ass.
Yeah.
Is bothersome. And then you add on top of that, that they could very well book him to beat Brock Lesnar and piss away a golden opportunity to make someone else into a star for the future. It's like, good God. I get a lot of this is that they're panicking and that network subscriptions aren't what they would want them to be. And that because of that, the financial situation is not the rosiest. And that by taking a proven commodity like John Cena and putting him on top, they can kind of calm the shareholders down. It's always sort of been the thing, you know, well, let's go back to what we know works when, you know, things are when times are tough. But in terms of actually booking a wrestling promotion, Lesnar presents them with a unique opportunity, I think, that they would be fools to waste, and I'm afraid that they are going to waste it. Because when it comes to John Cena, they seem unable to book him at a disadvantage for very long. I'm shocked, actually, that they went ahead with him getting his ass kicked like he did at SummerSlam. And if John Cena walks out of Night of Champions as the WWE champion, it'll be one of the biggest wasted opportunities since the botched WCW invasion in 2001. Talk about pissing money away. So that's basically all I've got to say on wrestling. I hope Night of Champions comes and goes and I'm proven wrong. But I don't have the highest hopes in the matter.
So let me see if I get this. Mm-hmm. You think that WWE might be making a bad business decision?
Yes.
Now, I'm sorry if I'm fresh off the turnip truck, but this seems unprecedented to me. You bring up very valid points, and I pretty much, for what very little it's worth, I agree with you. Though most of my reasons are just, I'm just sick of John Cena's face. I mean, God, he's so fucking annoying.
It pisses me off when he shows up in his stupid, like, he looks like a cartoon character, and a lot of people will say, well, wrestler, in a lot of ways, pro wrestler are supposed to be cartoon characters, and I get that, yeah. But he seems like such a corporate shill of a cartoon character when he comes out in the ball cap and the t-shirt and the wrist and armbands, which all match. And he looks like a walking merchandise stand. And it's just so gaudy and so over the top.
God. He's worse than Thrall.
Indeed. Indeed. He is the Thrall of WWE. He is the Bumblebee of WWE. And, you know, I'm not saying Brock Lesnar has to turn heel. He doesn't have to become a bad guy. I mean, not Brock Lesnar, John Cena. John Cena doesn't have to become a bad guy. Brock Lesnar is already a very bad man. But just having John Cena come out and be like, I got my ass kicked. I underestimated Brock Lesnar. You know, this is fucking, this is hardcore, man. Like, this whole you can't see me business isn't cutting it anymore. I need to toughen the fuck up and maybe have some scenes of John Cena working out at a gym. And, you know, maybe he comes out and he's not, and he doesn't have the baseball cap. Maybe he just has a black t-shirt on. Maybe he's showing a bit of an edge. He's not bad guy, but he's just a bit more aggressive than usual. And he's showing that he's not going to be this flamboyant cartoon character. He's actually taking Lesnar seriously. That would be nice to see, but we're not getting that. And it's just frustrating. It's frustrating because it's an opportunity to freshen John Cena's character up, and they're not taking it. And Lesnar presents them with an opportunity to make Roman Reigns a huge star, and they're probably going to piss it away. I'm not saying Roman Reigns should face him at Night of Champions. I'm saying you keep the title on Lesnar until WrestleMania 31, then you have Reigns beat him.
Right.
And even if Lesnar is the champion going into WrestleMania, it won't, as far as Reigns is concerned, that win won't mean as much if John Cena beats Lesnar beforehand. I mean,
yeah.
Okay, John Cena is at that point where he's as popular as he's going to be, and nothing's really going to damage that popularity. He's been the top guy for 10 years. He should be allowed to fail. Let Lesnar kick his ass at Night of Champions. And let John Cena fought him at SummerSlam, got his ass kicked. John Cena gets his rematch, gets his ass kicked. John Cena realizes that this is a fight he probably can't do. And then you do the fucking, maybe Rocky III, kind of, where John Cena's now playing Apollo. And John Cena, you know, helps Reigns out, maybe. A combination of 3 and 4, Rocky 4, sorry. But where, like, John Cena tries, and he fails, and now Roman Reigns is Rocky, and he comes in. That's what you gotta do. Of course, in that analogy, Paul Heyman becomes Ivan Drago's wife, and I'm not sure how that works, but, you know, there it is.
I'm scared, Mommy.
Of course, the whole Rocky IV thing then gets more complicated because we actually have Rusev and Lana, who are Ivan Drago and his wife, so I'm not sure. Ignore the Rocky IV parody they're doing and focus on the Rocky IV story they should be doing with Lesnar, Cena, and Reigns. That's what I'm saying. But, yeah. That's sort of my thoughts on pro wrestling. And again, I hope Night of Champions comes and goes, and I'm wrong. But I'm not. I've got a bad feeling about this, to quote Han Solo. Anything else, Jack?
No, I think you've pretty much said it all.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we're gonna bring basically a Geek Show number 30 to conclusion. It's interesting. In our 10th episode, we spent the whole time talking about WrestleMania 30. And now our 30th episode, and we close it with wrestling. That's kind of neat. But you can check us out on Twitter, at A Geek Show. You can email us at basicallyageekshow@gmail.com. You can catch us on Stitcher and Spreaker, on iTunes and YouTube, at sportslogos.net, the message board there, under the lounge, the Basically a Sports Show thread. You can catch us on forums.taisha2.org, basically a Geek Show thread. And TFW2005.com in the forums under the Transformers video discussion thread. We've got weekly threads there. Check us out in all those places. And check out the Basically a Football Show college football preview that was just released. And look forward to the Basically a Football Show NFL preview. I'm actually really excited. We're now in that position. We're basically a sports show, basically a football show, and basically a geek show. We're all kind of coexisting at the same time, and it's really cool. So check that out. And look forward to Basically a Sports Show. We kind of took a break last week, just kind of the scheduling got all funky, but we will be back with Bass. But Basically a Geek Show 30 coming to a close. For Jack, this is Mike, and I'm signing off.
Night, everybody.
Try again.